Morning, everyone. Our next presenting company is Phathom Pharmaceuticals. I'm David Steinberg, specialty pharma analyst at Jefferies, and you may not have heard of Phathom, and for good reason, because they've only been public for 4 weeks. In fact, the company didn't even exist about a year ago. That said, they're one of the more exciting opportunities in the sector, focused on GI. The company is focused on GERD, and 25% of patients don't respond well to PPIs, and they could have best-in-class drug for treating H. pylori. So, to walk you through the story and answer your questions, we have Aditi Akoli, Chief Business Officer of Phathom.
Thanks, Dave, and to the Jefferies team for inviting us here today. Phathom is a GI-focused company. Our lead asset, vonoprazan, is de-risked, late-stage, de-risked in both a commercial perspective and a clinical perspective. And we believe vonoprazan can be the cornerstone to build a leading GI company around. My name is Aditi Akoli. I am the Chief Business Officer at Phathom. I have a background in business development, management consulting, and venture capital. The Phathom story really starts with the team, and especially our chairman, Tachi Yamada. Tachi is a world-renowned gastroenterologist, former president of the AGA, and former head of R&D at Takeda, where he developed vonoprazan. David Sox is our CEO. He apologizes he can't be here today due to a last-minute family emergency. But David has a long history of creating companies based on pharma spin-outs. David, by design, was always our interim CEO. Given the late-stage nature of this asset, we wanted to find someone with a real history of launching and building commercial brands. And so with that, we're really excited to bring in Terry Curran. Terry is currently the president of I&I at Celgene and was really responsible for the Otezla business from its launch in the U.S. through its pending sale to Amgen. Once Terry joins, David will move into the CFO. In addition to Terry, we are pleased that Ozmi Nabulsi has joined us as our Chief Operating Officer. Ozmi has a 14-year history at Takeda before joining Phathom, and at Takeda was involved in the development of vonoprazan as well as two other PPIs, Dexilant and Prevacid. In addition to Ozmi, we brought over 12 other folks from Takeda, very talented, including Tom Harris. Tom was the Global Head of Regulatory at Takeda and has joined us in the same role at Phathom. So I'll spend the rest of the presentation speaking about vonoprazan, our lead asset. Vonoprazan is a potassium-competitive acid blocker, or PCAB. PCABs have long been the holy grail class in the anti-secretory space, but it's really taken until today and Takeda to get a drug that really fits the right profile. Vonoprazan is de-risked, as I said, from a clinical perspective, with 17 phase 3 studies completed outside the U.S., and from a commercial perspective, in its fourth full year of launch in Japan, it did over $500 million in net sales. At Phathom, we have the rights to vonoprazan in the United States, Europe, and Canada. So PCABs, in our view, are really the next generation in acid control therapeutics. This category of pharmaceuticals has a long history dating back to the 1930s, starting with antacids, and then with H2 blockers in the 1970s. Interestingly, Tagamet was the world's first blockbuster drug. And in the late 80s, when H2s were around, there was a perception in the market that the unmet need was really well served with H2s. But we all know what happened next. PPIs came around. There were five blockbuster brands, peak sales of $12.5 billion for the class. And we think something very similar is playing out today with vonoprazan in Japan. Vonoprazan in Japan has the brand name Takecab, which is on the top right-hand corner here. So this differentiated profile of vonoprazan really stems from this distinct mechanism from PPIs. So both vonoprazan and PPIs target the proton pump. The proton pump is located in the stomach on the gastric parietal cells and is responsible for pumping proton atoms into the stomach and acidifying the gastric lumen. However, these proton pumps are actually quite tricky to pin down for a couple reasons. Number one, the proton pumps are constantly switching between an active and an inactive state throughout the day. And number two, these pumps are constantly regenerated every day. So you need a drug that's going to hang around for the full 24-hour dosing interval to continuously inhibit the proton pumps. PPIs are good drugs, but they have a couple limitations mechanistically. The first is that they only inhibit the active proton pumps, so they don't hit those inactive pumps. Second is that they have a relatively short half-life of 1 to 2 hours, so they're not around later in the day when new pumps are generated and come online. And third, PPIs are prodrugs that require acid for activation, and since they require acid for activation, they're capped in their ability to block acid secretion after a certain point, because they just won't work at that point. So all that is to say that PPIs take about 3 to 5 days to reach their steady state effect, have limited potency in their acid control, and limited durability in that acid suppression. Contrast all of that with vonoprazan. Vonoprazan is a reversible competitive inhibitor of the proton pump. It does not require acid for activation. It inhibits both active and inactive proton pumps, and it has a long half-life of 7 to 9 hours. So it really ticks all the boxes on limitations for PPIs. So we view vonoprazan as rapid in its activity and potent and durable as well. This is all, I think, best shown here. This is a pharmacodynamic study conducted in healthy volunteers comparing vonoprazan to Nexium, a PPI. And on the y-axis, you'll see the gastric pH, which is the level of acid in the stomach. And on the left-hand side at day one, the thin gray line at the bottom is the baseline pH of the stomach. You can see the blue line, which is Nexium, on day one barely moves above baseline. In contrast, vonoprazan on day one shoots all the way up to pH 7, which is neutral. Moving to the right side, on day 7, when Nexium is really at its steady state, vonoprazan is still about 1 to 2 pH units higher than Nexium. Now remember, pH is a log scale, so that really represents a 10 to 100x fold increase in acid suppression over PPIs. Importantly also, at day 7, you'll notice that about hour 18, there's a drop in the gastric pH, and that really represents acid breakthrough at nighttime and is a driver for persistent symptoms in patients at nighttime. It's a key unmet need in GERD. And you can see that vonoprazan maintains the pH at nighttime better than Nexium. And we'll show some additional data on that later. So this data combined with the clinical data, which we'll walk through in a minute, showing differentiation from PPIs, has really led to this rapid uptake in Japan for vonoprazan. In its fourth full year on the market, vonoprazan has done more than $500 million in net sales. In its last two quarters, vonoprazan is doing more than $320 million in net sales. So it's continuing to grow, and we think the opportunity in the U.S. is meaningful as well. In terms of our pipeline, we're really focused on two indications. The first indication is in GERD, specifically in erosive esophagitis, in the healing of erosive esophagitis, maintenance of healing, and relief of heartburn. The second indication is in combination with antibiotics for the eradication of H. pylori infection. For both of these indications, we will commence a single phase 3 study later this year. And importantly, we met with the FDA and EMA this summer and agreed that one single study in each of these indications, supported by the existing data outside the U.S., is sufficient for an NDA submission. So we'll shift gears a little bit and talk about the two indications. So the first is GERD. GERD is a highly prevalent disease. More than 6 billion doses of PPIs were prescribed in the last 12 months in the U.S. However, given the prevalence of PPIs, there's still a significant unmet need in this market, and about 25% of patients are not adequately treated by PPIs. We think vonoprazan can be the solution for many of those patients. So this is data from a head-to-head study of vonoprazan and lansoprazole. Lansoprazole is Prevacid, it's PPI. This is a head-to-head study conducted in Japan in the healing of erosive esophagitis. So the endpoint of this study is an objective one, looking at healing of erosions in the esophagus over time. So you can see that on the left-hand side, vonoprazan acts more quickly than Prevacid at week 2 in healing of erosions. And on the right-hand side, vonoprazan is more potent in its activity and is able to heal those more severe Los Angeles class C and D patients better than lansoprazole. So these data taken together suggest to us that vonoprazan acts more rapidly than a PPI and more potently as well. In a second phase 3 study conducted in Japan, again head-to-head with vonoprazan and Prevacid lansoprazole, this time in the maintenance of healing of erosive esophagitis, vonoprazan again demonstrated superiority to lansoprazole The recurrence rate at 24 weeks for vonoprazan was in the low single digits, 2 to 5%, versus as high as 39% for lansoprazole. These maintenance of healing data are particularly important in terms of avoiding the sequelae of erosive esophagitis, including Barrett's esophagus, esophageal cancer, and we believe there's a pharmacoeconomic story to tell here as well. In terms of symptom relief, this is data from a smaller study conducted in Japan. You can see on the left-hand side, again, this is vonoprazan versus Prevacid, that vonoprazan has a faster time to onset of complete symptom relief than Prevacid. And on the right-hand side, in this key unmet need in GERD of nighttime symptom relief, vonoprazan is also looks better. So this is our phase 3 clinical program that we are commencing later this year. This is a single phase 3 study that will give us 3 indications. An indication in the healing of erosive esophagitis, maintenance of healing of erosive esophagitis, and relief of heartburn. Again, we've agreed to the design of the study with regulatory agencies and agreed that this single study, supported by the data in Japan, is sufficient for an NDA submission. Talk about H. pylori. So H. pylori is a gut pathogen that, if left untreated, can lead to significant clinical sequelae, including gastric cancer. H. pylori is traditionally treated with a combination of antibiotics to eradicate the bug and a PPI to raise the pH. And the reason is that the antibiotics at low pH don't work very well. By raising the pH, you stabilize the antibiotic, you improve their potency, and you also get the bug replicating. And when the bug's replicating, it's more vulnerable. So the idea here is you want to get the pH as high as you can in order to eradicate the infection. Now, the issue with H. pylori is that 20 years ago, the eradication rates were above 90%. In the last 20 years, however, they've declined to below 80%. And that's really driven by emergence of antibiotic resistance, especially to clarithromycin. So the solution here, there are really two possibilities. One is to develop novel antibiotics to work against H. pylori. Unfortunately, none of those are in development. The second option, as I said earlier, is to raise the pH even higher to power up the existing antibiotics. And that's exactly what we've seen with vonoprazan. So this is data from a Japanese head-to-head phase 3 study of vonoprazan in combination with two antibiotics, clarithromycin and amoxicillin, versus Prevacid in combination with those same antibiotics. You can see that on the left-hand side, vonoprazan has an eradication rate above 90%, which is the threshold you really want to clear in this infection, whereas the Prevacid triple therapy arm has an eradication rate still below 80%, which is very similar to what we see in the West. Very importantly, vonoprazan has efficacy in those patients on the right-hand side that have resistant infections. So this really speaks to the power of vonoprazan to power up existing antibiotics. In two smaller studies in Japan, vonoprazan was investigated in a dual therapy. So in a dual therapy, you drop clarithromycin from the eradication regimen, looking at just vonoprazan and amoxicillin alone. And in these two studies, vonoprazan plus amoxicillin alone was able to raise the eradication rate above 90%. These data are obviously important from an antibiotic stewardship perspective, a public health perspective, but also from a patient compliance and tolerability perspective as well. These are data from a national claims database in Japan. That suggests that if you look at the data on the curve on the right, from 2012 to 2015, the eradication rate across the country is declining to below 80%. However, directly after the launch of vonoprazan, the eradication rate moves back up to north of 85%. And this data has really driven the fact that vonoprazan now has a 90% share in this indication in Japan. So this is a design of our phase 3 study in H. pylori. We're testing the triple therapy combination, so vonoprazan, clarithromycin, and amoxicillin, the dual therapy, vonoprazan and amoxicillin, versus the standard of care triple therapy, which is Prevacid plus clarithromycin plus amoxicillin. This study is very similar in design to the Japanese study that was conducted. And again, we're going to commence the study later this year, and we've agreed with the FDA and EMA that this study, supported by the data from Japan, is sufficient for an NDA submission. In terms of safety, we're very lucky. There's a wealth of experience here with vonoprazan. It's been tested in more than 6,500 subjects in the clinic, and more than 23 million patients have received vonoprazan in a post-marketing setting in Japan. Across both of those experiences, there have been no significant differences between the safety profile of an Oprazane and a PPI. One area of keen focus for both Phathom and for Takeda was hepatic safety. That's because there are two earlier PCABs that failed in part due to hepatic safety from AstraZeneca and Shearing Plough. However, in looking at the clinical data for vonoprazan across all the clinical studies, there is no difference in the clinical profile in terms of hepatic safety versus a PPI. So shifting gears to talk about the commercial potential. Vonoprazan, Takeda's been publishing on vonoprazan and talking about vonoprazan at public conferences for 4 or 5 years. And so physicians in the US and Europe are quite familiar with the product already. We conducted a market research study in 100 GI physicians and 100 primary care physicians, asking them their preference to use vonoprazan. And they indicated that they would like to use vonoprazan in up to 60% of their GERD patients and 70% of their H. pylori patients. So physicians really like the profile of this drug. The next question is around market access, right? If we know physicians like it, the question is market access. And so we're very fortunate to have a very recent case study with Dexilant. Dexilant is the last branded PPI available and is really an extended-release version of a single isomer of Prevacid. So it has some PK advantages to traditional PPIs, and it has translated to small benefits in pH control. However, there have been no clinically meaningful differentiation or superiority data over other PPIs. Despite that lack of differentiation, Dexilant has done about more than $500 million in peak sales in the U.S. alone. And we think that's really representative of the unmet need in this space. So in terms of market access for Dexilant, it enjoys broad access. More than 90% of commercial lives have access to Dexilant. And across the top five plans by covered lives, Dexilant enjoys tier two or tier three status without any prior auths or step edits. So relatively unfettered access for Dexilant, which we think is really emblematic of the unmet need in this space again, and the fact that, you know, PPIs used to be a $12 billion class. Today, Dexilant's the only one around, so payers are managing this category less strictly than they were in the past. In terms of our financial position, we conducted an IPO earlier at the end of October, and we currently have enough capital to run both phase three studies with significant runway on the back end of the readouts of both those studies. We do not intend to raise additional capital until after those phase three readouts. And with that, I'm happy to take any questions.
Sorry if you mentioned it, but why is it Takeda launching?
If you mentioned this earlier, but why isn't Takeda launching in the U.S. themselves?
Yeah, that's a good question. So Takeda is very much a partner in this business with us. They were founders in the company. They are significant equity holders in the company, and they do have some downstream commercial economics that would come back to them in terms of milestone payments and royalties. As you know, Takeda has undergone a strategic shift recently with the acquisition of Shire, so that may have contributed to that decision.
Could you talk about what kind of milestones you would owe them and what kind of royalty rate?
Yeah, absolutely. So in terms of milestones, there are no development or regulatory milestones that we owe Takeda. We owe them some commercial milestones down the road that are the type we're very happy to pay. And in terms of a royalty, it's a very low double-digit royalty.
So one question that a lot of investors have is, you know, this is really a big pharma type asset. You know, almost every large pharma marketed a PPI and hit billions of dollars in sales. And so the question is, how was it that a small unknown company like yourselves got the asset, and why did Takeda not license it to a big pharma company where potentially they could generate a lot more in peak sales than a small company could?
Yeah, I think a big part of why we got the asset has to do with the team. You know, we have very strong connections back to Takeda with Tachi Yamada and Osmina Bulsi and others that we brought over, and I think we are viewed as a trusted partner to Takeda.
How large sales force would you need? to have any impact in this market?
Yeah, it's a good question. We haven't yet disclosed the sizing of our sales force. However, we're encouraged in terms of this market for two reasons. I think, you know, if you were launching a PPI or a PCAB 10, 15 years ago when there were five big pharma companies all promoting PPIs, you wouldn't have been able to do it as a small company. But today, there's very limited competition in this space, and we expect to have a majority of the share of voice. That's the first piece. The second piece is that the PPI prescriber base is actually relatively concentrated. So 1.5% of all PPI prescribers write 20% of the scripts, and 6% of all PPI prescribers write 50% of the scripts. So we think given that concentration, it's something tractable for a small company to take on. Sure. So on the IP side, our composition of matter patent runs to 2028 and our formulation patent to 2030. That's before extensions. So with extensions, we can, I think, comfortably get into the early 2030s. However, that's likely going to be trumped by regulatory exclusivity. We were granted QIDP status for the H. pylori indication. And what that means, that comes with a five-year extension of regulatory exclusivity. So if we have 5 years of Hatch-Waxman for NCE, an additional 5 years for the GAIN Act exclusivity, and then additional 6 months for pediatrics, we're looking at least 10 and a half years from first approval. Okay. Thank you.